Welcome to the Sourcing Hero podcast, produced by UNA, a group purchasing organization that empowers sourcing heroes, and Art of Procurement, the world's largest procurement podcast network. I'm your host, Kelly Barner. The goal of the Sourcing Hero podcast is to capture the epic stories of people who are rising up and beating the odds to create exceptional value within procurement, directly from those heroes themselves. Today, my guest here on the Sourcing Hero podcast is Elizabeth Blount McCormick. Elizabeth is the president and owner of Uniglobe Travel Designers. Now, her firm specializes in designing, coordinating, and delivering complex travel plans. Something tells me these days pretty much all travel plans are complex, but they put these plans together for individuals, groups, and corporate travel partners. She is also a Black woman-owned business, and she's going to share some of her firsthand experience with us on that today. So, Elizabeth, after that intro, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much. I'm excited.
Now, I know from having spoken to you before that you draw on your own past experience as a corporate traveler, and that's part of how you create an exceptional customer experience now. Can you tell us a little bit more about that background experience as a traveler and how it influences the work that you do today?
Sure. So prior to joining my family business, I was a corporate traveler in the retail space. And my last stint in retail, I was working for Bono, the head singer of U2. And I was flying internationally constantly. And when I traveled, I would travel to Tunisia, New Delhi, and Portugal in the same trip, which seems kind of crazy. But just understanding that you need to have an advocate and really an expert that can help you navigate those waters was critical, right? So when I traveled, I needed to make sure that I had car services picking me up. At times I was traveling by myself, understanding that I needed to be in a safe area, right? When you're traveling to countries and you're a woman traveling by yourself, you got to have all of your ducks in a row. And the response time is key too, right? And especially now, travel is even more complex. That these waters are uncharted territory.
Oh, yes.
And just having someone that can help you, right? And understanding, like, what are the requirements if I travel internationally? What are the COVID procedures? What are the vaccination requirements? I mean, that's what we're looking at today. But also understanding that the hospitality industry has been crushed, right? It's completely crushed in 2020. There's a little bright spot in 21. And unfortunately, right now, with where we are in the pandemic, it's, you know, it's still complicated. And I say that so many businesses, hotels, car rental companies, airlines, they're all trying to still figure this out. And this week, just in particular, Kelly, I mean, so many flights have been canceled because of the pandemic, right? But you've got to have an advocate. You have to have someone who will utilize relationships that you know, travel management companies have in this field to really navigate for you. It's just complex, and it's going to continue to be that way. And so from my experience as a traveler, I just realized what I wanted. So our service level agreements, like, we respond within an hour if we receive a request, right? We have technology that's in place so that if there's a cancellation or delay, we're aware of that the same time the traveler is. So if you're flying and you land in Atlanta Hartsfield, for example, and your flight was canceled from Atlanta to LA, we're already reaccommodating you. Mm. It's just those kinds of things. It's peace of mind and knowing you're not standing in a line with 150 people at the customer service line or center at in a particular airport. You're calling us and we'll take care of it. And I think that's even more important now, right? I think gone are the days of when people would just, like, felt like, oh, I can just book it myself. It's just not, people don't want to take that risk anymore, right? For business travel, for leisure travel. I mean, we've done so much research here in the U.S. You know, we don't, our kind of view on vacations and leisure time is very different, right? In Europe, sometimes Yes. You're taking 3 months off. And so I mention this because even when people are looking for their personal leisure time, they want to make the most of it. And again, there are uncharted territories with vacation travel. Some resorts have closed, right? The destination management companies that create these once-in-a-lifetime experiences, a lot of those are closed as well. So to when you're traveling for personal and leisure and vacation, you want it to be stress-free. But you need a partner that can help you and can set the expectation because it's different. And I think that people are really seeing that. And then travel insurance is a whole nother conversation, right? I've been talking to so many people and saying, look, I would consider that. When we're talking to corporations and corporate clients, I always say, like, what is your policy? Is COVID included? That's just something to think about now. Because if you're traveling on business and you can track COVID, what's the responsibility of the traveler, of the organization? So again, these waters are rough and it will take a while to see how it all shakes out, right? And what the new procedures will be and what will the new experience of travel look like. But Kelly, I always tell people, just be kind to people because yes, everybody's stressed. Everybody's feeling fatigue of the pandemic and kindness goes a long way.
No, absolutely. You're right about that. And to your point about kindness, stress and disruption do not discriminate. Kindness shouldn't either. And one thing I just have to go back for a second before we get into sort of your perspective as a Black woman-owned business. Best name drop ever. Okay, I didn't miss that detail. You two's Bono. Seriously, Elizabeth, how did this not come up in our pre-interview? We would have been talking about a completely different topic for this 30 minutes if I had known. So I'm glad you gave us that extra piece of fun detail there about your experience.
Well, I worked in retail, so I'll just be very quick.
Sure.
So I went to Spelman College, which is a Black women's college in Atlanta. And then I interviewed for a job with Gap Incorporated. Their headquarters is in San Francisco. So I went through the interview process. I was hired and I worked out there for a year. 9/11 happened. And then Gap at the time had a Gap International sourcing office in Miami, Florida. So I was like a young 20-year-old. I moved to Miami and I lived there for 3 years and had a great time on South Beach. And then my family kind of had an intervention with me. They're like, okay, you got to do something else. So actually, the person that I worked for in Miami, I knew that she was working in New York City at a company that I was really interested in. And so I reached out to her and, you know, it's about relationships, right? And so reached out to her and then I ended up being hired for Bono's company. So it's called Eden. It's a small brand that's sold in like Neiman Marcus and Bergdorf and Nordstrom carried at one point, but then like boutiques all over the world. So I was his production manager for about a year. And that's why I was traveling all over the place. And I really was able to get that firsthand knowledge of being a business traveler and what were the pain points for me, right? And how would I want to be treated and helped if something went wrong? So
absolutely,
that helped a lot with my experiences of what I want my clients to experience.
Now, and to that point about how would you want to be treated, this to me, this conversation is a very unique and important opportunity. I'm more on the corporate or buy side things side of things in terms of my past experience. I think a lot of the people, although definitely not all of the people who listen to The Sourcing Hero, are in a similar boat to me. And one of the things that I've noticed, especially given the surge in interest around all kinds of diversity, since 2020 is that a lot of the conversations, you know, as much as we're talking about being inclusive, our conversations tend to be relatively insular. So it's me talking to other procurement thought leaders or supplier diversity managers talking to other supplier diversity managers what we really need is to facilitate more conversations between the buy side and the supply side. So I would like to learn a little bit more from you about your firsthand experience on the supply side of that equation.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned in my intro, you're certified, and that's an important piece here, right? You're certified as both Black-owned and also woman-owned. How does that come into your work around business development, around building relationships? How do you consider that part of your corporate identity? How do you bring it into your sales process when you're trying to grow?
That's a great question. Well, I mean, a couple of things. I've definitely looked for opportunities with organizations that valued, you know, equity, really, even before 2020, right? And because we're qualified and we can compete with majority-owned organizations as well. And I don't lead with those certifications. And honestly, Kelly, you'll laugh, but when I talk to people, they can't tell what my race is by our conversation. So that never comes up initially, but then at the end, they'll ask, like, are you certified? And I'll say, yes, I'm a Black and women-owned business, and I'm certified nationally. And so many people are excited about that, which is a great thing. There are a lot of organizations that were committed to that before 2020, before the equity conversation really took a kind of a seat, right, for lack of a better term. And so, you know, with that, it's been great. And I will tell you, in addition, we've had other organizations reach out to us because they're taking a look with a microscope and inspecting their supplier diversity program and trying to make sure that it's not a check the box situation where they're just saying, oh, we had a Black or women-owned business compete in this RFP process, but that there's a legitimate chance, which is different. And I'll tell you, I ask people straight up, like, is there a real opportunity here or not? Right? Because, I mean, everyone wants to make sure. And for me, I really focus on those reciprocal relationships. It's a relationship when we're engaging with the client, but it has to be a respectful one. And again, I don't have time to waste like no one else does. It's not like an RFP process can be so costly. And without knowing that there is a fair chance, there's no point in even participating. Right. So I always have those honest conversations like, how long have you been with the incumbent? What's your commitment to supplier diversity? In some cases, when people are in you know, purchasing procurement, people are looking at diversity, they may slice off 20% of something. Right. So they may say, OK, for us to get our feet wet with a diverse supplier, you know, well, 20% of, I'm just making this up, like the sure. paper spend will go to a Black or women-owned company. But I always have those conversations initially. And I'll tell you, I know a lot of business owners across the country, and I've been outspoken about equity and outspoken about some of the situations that I've experienced, because I think it's important for people to hear that. But when they ask me, like, what can I do? I always tell them, like, look at your executive team. Look at your hiring practices. Look at your supplier diversity, right? But it has to come from the top of the organization all the way down. It has to be embedded in all throughout the entire organization to really make a difference and to get to an equitable place. You know, so for me, I've learned because I've been in this, I'll say this game for a while. So I will just, instead of just kind of being bashful about it, I just come straight out with the question, like, is this an opportunity or not? Is this a check the box situation or not? Because, hey, I'm not going to participate if there really isn't a fair chance. Does that make sense? I mean, I'd rather work with people that want to work with me.
Right.
And not waste my time. And you know, there are different situations that I face where people thought like that I was less than, or that I didn't have a real office staff or a team, or that I was like operating out of a garage, when I'm like, no, I have two office spaces. I have remote workers. It's been those kind of biases that I've had to face. But I don't see them as a barrier. I just see them as something I have to get around. Does that make sense? That kind of stuff stop me. You can't.
No. Well, and I think the piece that's interesting is, you know, the cost of participating in an RFP, procurement is finally starting to sort of absorb the reality that you can't just churn your suppliers. And this applies to all suppliers, right? Regardless of who owns them, how big they are, there is always a cost, both right. in terms of direct time and effort, and then also more of an indirect opportunity cost associated with participating. So if a supplier sort of gets a whiff early on that they don't really have a chance, can you really blame them for being out, right? Because they have fixed time and resources. Right. But then when you think about how that impacts any kind of diversity certified supplier, there's an additional level of cost. And so one of the things I would like you to speak to, if you would, what is the cost, whether you want to talk about fees or time or effort or energy, however you look at that, what is the cost to you personally and your business more holistically to secure and maintain these multiple certifications you have to have?
That's a great question. Well, I think initially getting the certification, that's really the harder part. It's like a biography of your business, right? And your personal finances, and have you had any legal trouble? I mean, it's the documents that you've had to submit in the past. I mean, it's 200-300 pages, right? Yeah. To get certified, just to be able to compete. And so I would say the cost, because my time that's been placed on that, I mean, thousands and thousands of dollars, right? Of just making sure that our certification is intact. And I actually am fortunate enough, I have someone on my team who has become just an expert in the RFP space and the certification space. So she maintains the calendar and maintains like our documentation and make sure that we have all of that saved on our shared drive. But I'm fortunate because a number of businesses don't have that, right? And so, you know, yeah, we're putting the effort into the certifications and even the RFP process, but we have it down to a science and you have to get there, but you have to have the resources to be able to do that. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
And I think that the thing that people don't realize is that in some cases, I think it's 80%, 80 to 90% of Black-owned businesses have 1 to 5 employees. So imagine the burden, and they want to grow too. They just need an access to an opportunity, right? But if you have 1 to 5 employees and you're trying to do all of this and continue to maintain your business, it's like it can become almost daunting and impossible. But the one thing, though, that I've found out is that there are companies that specialize in this, in the certifications, and gathering all the information and submitting your application. So there are a few that I know, and I always highlight those, right? And I've been on a number of different like conversations and panels, and I've talked about just the importance of having your certifications. It is critical. If you're a minority-owned business, if you're a women-owned business, it's like it's another kind of nail in the coffin to confirm you're legitimate, honestly. But, you know, for us, the thing that we have to stay on top of is just the recertification process, right? Okay. I mean, and when we receive those notifications 2 or 3 months in advance, we'll submit that as early as possible because things can come up. You know, right now we're working on our WeBank certification. There were questions about our recertification, and there are questions about PPP, and both of those were forgiven, and EIDL. The jury's still out on what's going to happen with EIDL. We don't know yet. But, I mean, those are the kind of questions that are being asked now, right? So it's just like, it's very interesting, but you know, again, we have all that information in an organized place. It's easy for us to just pull our application number, our loan number and all, but it's not easy like that for everybody, right?
Right.
And it's just something that people need to realize. It's like some of these processes for certifications and for RFPs are just so intense that people may not be able to even grow because they don't have the bandwidth or the people, the bodies to do it. But I'll tell you, one thing that's encouraging, Kelly, is that I keep hearing about how there are these movements where one certification would really qualify for all. Does that make sense?
So yes, it does.
Which is great. Like, you know, for me, we're certified nationally by the NMSDC. But for me to do business in the state of New York, I'm certified there as a minority women-owned business. I had to do that. And it's fine. I don't care. If I have to go through the process, we'll do it over and over and over again. But I'm hopeful that a national certification will be enough in the future. Does that make sense? Because if you're doing this 10, 20, or 50 times if you want to do business in every state, and every state has different requirements, I mean, again, if you don't have the bandwidth, it's almost impossible to accomplish that. But I don't see it as a barrier. Again, I see it as an opportunity, right? I'm like, okay, if I want to compete in New York, then we're gonna have to get certified, and we do that. But it's just something people need to think about. It's like, is a national certification enough, right? Why isn't it? I mean, you had to go through all the work anyway to submit, you know, 200 or 300 pages to get the initial certification. Why would I have to do that again? You get what I'm saying? So I'm hoping.
I do.
That people are listening and thinking about that. And then honestly, sometimes I think, man, there's so many hoops I have to jump through, and other people that don't look like me, they don't have to do that. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but why is that the case? And I'm hopeful that something will change.
Well, and I think part of that is, you know, people on the buy side, and I'll just stick to private sector, right? I know things in the public sector are different. I'll stick to the private side of things because it's what I know better. But I think probably a lot of either procurement professionals, generally CPOs, you would hope supplier diversity managers would have a better sense of this, but they may not know that you have to maintain multiple certifications that effectively say the same thing in order to quote unquote count as a diverse owned business you know, based on where they're located. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've talked about, you know, sort of the certification process. We've talked about the fact, which I think is so important. You make the case, hey, I can compete with anybody, you know, if the whole thing is blindfolded. And that's important too, because you're saying, I have an excellent business. We do an amazing job. We name drop Bono, right? But the fact of the matter is, this is an additional consideration that a lot of companies are looking at. And so making it realistic to bring this into the relationship is something that corporate wants. We just have to do a slightly better job of executing on it and operationalizing it. So if I told you that right now I have the ear of every single corporate CPO and supplier diversity manager or director in the world listening, what would you want them to know from the supplier's perspective that they might never guess? And that could be something they could do for you that has never occurred to them but would make an enormous difference. It would be something that's complicated or challenging for you that they might not be aware of how big of a demand they're making. What is it that you would like everybody on the corporate buy side of this type of initiative to know?
You know, what I would say is really practice what you preach. And what I mean by that is, so many corporations came out and said Black Lives Matter when it was popular and a fad, but aren't even backing up that statement, right? And they have the power to do that. And so it's like, there are businesses that have been given an opportunity that have grown and are probably, you know, business owners that are multi-billionaires just from given an opportunity, where sure, mistakes happen because no one's perfect.
Right.
But why not give a supplier that doesn't look like you, right, an opportunity to have that same type of growth? So that's what I'm hoping. It's like, you've got to really practice what you preach. Stand behind it. You said it, but take some action. Because really, a critical place where people can make a change is in supplier diversity and suppliers and vendors that you actually work with. I mean, for a number of these large corporations, Kelly, like, okay, I've done all this work and I'm certified, right? But then I have to go into their vendor portal and register and submit all these documents and have to make sure I've been approved. I mean, there are all of these steps and hoops. And, you know, it's like, but other businesses don't have to do that.
Right.
Right. So it's like, can we change that? Like why not? And I'll tell you, in some cases, I remember working with this university where we shared an account with a company that happened to be a white-owned company. And our approval rating was like 97 to 98%. Our kind of the company we shared the account with, they were like at 54%. And we were told you need to be at 100. Wait a minute, what? So think about that. So I'm hoping procurement people that are listening to this are like, what in the world? So they had their standards were less than, right? We were damn near perfect. But why, what's wrong with it? What's wrong with this picture, right? It's like, sometimes I think, not even sometimes, just honestly, oftentimes these women owned and Black owned and minority owned companies, these standards and having to be perfect, like, but do you hold those standards to the majority owned companies or the white owned companies? No. And why not? Right? Like there's got to be some grace there too.
Absolutely.
That's how I feel about it.
Well, and it's interesting because I think to your point about people that come out and make very outward statements, let's face it, you know, there's a strategy to that. People know that it appeals to their customer base. You get positive PR kind of a thing. There's actually a very well-known piece that ran in the Harvard Business Review, I think it was last year, although the author's name is slipping my mind at the moment. And she happens to be an influencer in the LGBTQ+ community. And the point of her article was basically, take that rainbow off your corporate logo if you can't show me or tell me what you did and what you're going to do, right? So making sure that our deeds align with our statements. And again, to your point, Elizabeth, this is so important, committing to it over time. These business relationships we have to come to them with the mindset that they're going to be sustained. It's better for everyone if we're we're sort of bonding for as long as any of us can think that we might realistically work together. It's a different level of commitment versus saying, uh-oh, something was bad in the news. I need to do some kind of knee-jerk thing. But like, is my heart really in it? I don't know. Am I going to change my decision-making frameworks? You know, times are hard, right?
Right.
And so changing the way we think about it, changing the way we engage with diverse owned businesses of all kinds, it's going to take time. But I love your honesty and your willingness to talk about this.
Yeah, I mean, it's like taboo, right? I think people are scared to have this conversation, but we need to talk about it, because the only way it's going to change is if people continue to hear about it. And they're going to say, well, what can I do? Because I think that there are a lot of good people in the world, but when you're working for big corporations and it's like this, I hate this phrase, but it's like boil the ocean, right? Yes. How do you even start? But it's like, there are things that you can do that can make a difference to get us to a place of equity. And it's just, but you have to call it out, and you have to be willing to be, I always say you have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yes.
And really looking at yourself and saying, can I do better? Absolutely.
And we all can always.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So given that we've talked about so many things, I'm really curious to see how you're going to answer this next question, because this question is like the Rorschach test of the Sourcing Hero podcast. It's the one question I ask absolutely everybody. How do you define either the concept? I mean, we typically talk about Sourcing Hero, but I think it's much broader than that. When you think about heroism in a business context, what does that mean to you?
I think it's definitely someone who is not status quo, is really taking a chance in being brave, especially in this space. You've got to be brave and really just speak up, because people know so many things have been wrong for so long. You know it, do something about it. So in the sourcing space, you know, to me, a sourcing hero is someone who's like, look at it, you realize it's not exactly where it needs to be. I mean, Kelly, if you think of all of the organizations that you know, all the corporations, how many of those would you say have a world-class supplier diversity program?
Not nearly as many as should.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like procurement, purchasing. This is your time. You have the power of the direction the company goes, of where the company is spending. Just do it. Right? Like there are so many resources. The NMSDC has a database. They're corporate plus partners. There are different chambers, African-American chambers in different cities that have lists of all these companies. There's the National Association of Women Business Owners, NAVO, that I'm a member of. There are WeBank. There's so many resources. Be intentional about it, because they have the power to make the change and to move us forward.
And Elizabeth, I remember when you and I spoke in the pre-interview, the two of us kind of set off from the call ready to conquer the world and change it all, right? And I hope some of that, of you know, your positive energy and your conviction and your willingness to take informed risks in order to drive change that you believe in, I hope everybody listening absolutely absorbs that and takes in a piece of it and charges off in their own direction to drive some kind of change. But if people would like to reach out to you directly and connect, whether it's about diverse business or whether it's about corporate travel, what's the best way for people to connect with you?
Sure. I mean, definitely LinkedIn. So that's Elizabeth Blount McCormick. And then we have our website, uniglobetraveldesigners.com. So those are great ways to reach me. And I'm always responsive and would love to talk to anyone who's curious. And if they have any questions about just supplier diversity and where to go and you know, really being intentional, I would welcome the conversations.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sourcing Hero podcast. Join us again next time for more true stories of sourcing and business heroism performed by your colleagues and peers. Look for the Sourcing Hero wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to subscribe. Finally, don't forget, sourcing heroism is taking place all around us every day. Keep your eyes open and you're bound to see it. Until next time, I'm your host, Kelly Barner. Stay well and always remember that you can be a hero too.